So this week we are focusing on the second of these two incredible women whose books we are introducing. This one is called Emuna with Love and Chicken Soup, the story of Rebbetzin Henny Machlis, the Brooklyn-born girl who became a Jerusalem legend. So another word of introduction parallel to, not the same, but parallel to what we spoke about last week in terms of thinking about these books as opportunities for growth. Even if we don't become Henny Machlis, Olah HaShalom, Zichron HaLevracha, Zichusa Tagin Aleinu, we don't become at this level in our own lives. But in addition to what we spoke about last week of aspiration and striving, there's even something, I think, to be said for connecting and holding on to. And I'll tell you what I mean. There is a story that Yaffa Eliach tells in Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust about the Blujever Rebbe, Rabbi Yisrael Spira, Zichron Livracha. So the Blujever, he did a lot of interviews with Yaffa Eliach, a lot of the stories that she has come from the Blujever. So apparently he was in a work camp, I'm probably mispronouncing it, it was called Janowska, or Janowska, Polish work camp. And one of the, I guess you could call it, entertainment that the Rishoim Arurim, they decided one day was they were going to have all the Jews line up at the edge of a ravine. And they had them stand there and jump over this enormous gulf. And if you could get... Ah, good morning, come. Shoshana, don't sit so far. I don't want you to be so far away. Come. Alan, good morning. There's plenty of space. There's more sheets. So they decided they were going to have everybody line up, and for their entertainment, they were going to leap over this. Any Jew who could leap over would go back to the barracks, and anybody who wouldn't would be shot in the pit. So the Blujever gets to the edge of this ditch, this ravine, and he's, you know, emaciated and malnourished, and he has such little strength left. So he's standing there, he's looking on the line, what is he going to do? And right behind him in line was someone from his town who was a very well-known maskil, a non-religious Jew, very intellectual thinker, whom they had some acquaintance before the war, before they ended up in the same place together. So they're getting to the line, and finally it's the Blujever's turn, and he closes his eyes, and he puts his hands together, and he leaps with the last ounce of strength that he had. And he opens his eyes, and there he is on the other side. And right next to him, he sees, is the guy who was standing behind him, that maskil. So they look at each other, and the maskil says to the Blujever, he says, Rebbe, tell me, how did you jump over this? How is that possible? The Blujever says, I'll tell you. I closed my eyes, and I saw the image of my father. And he was wearing a talis, and he turned, and I held on to the back of his talis. I held on to the bottom of the talis, and it carried me over. So the Blujever says to the maskil, how did you get over? So the maskil says, I closed my eyes, and I held on to you. So we could suggest that that's a bechina of what it means to read these svarim. That we can close our eyes and hold on to someone. And that someone could be in our lives right now, but that someone could also be someone whom we never met. No, I never met Henny Machlis personally. But by getting to know this unbelievable, incredible person, you can hold on to them at different points in our lives to carry us where we need to go. So the obvious place to start with this sefer would be chesed. Who could think of a more basic theme, which is, of course, why we're not going to think about chesed today, because that would be too obvious. But just for a moment, to understand what this was like. I never personally, I don't know if anybody, did anyone here ever eat at the machlises? I never had this experience because I always felt that, you know, I was, Baruch Hashem, well-fed in yeshiva, or at least, you know, well-fed between yeshiva and other supplemental sources. And I didn't want to take away some freeloading American guy should come over there. So I never went. But Nechama had opportunities because she has a friend who's an extended family of theirs. So she used to go to cook there on Thursday nights. And what she describes to me over there is exactly what is happening in this book, which Lo Yuhuman Ki Yisuper, Mamish, not to be believed. The level of chesed, right, this difference between tzedakah is helping others financially. Chesed, Gemilas Chasadim, is with yourself. It's Begufu Shel Adam. So this woman transformed her entire life, turned it upside down, to be in the service of other people, to the extent it's mamish lo yuman. Together with her husband, should live and be well, should have unbelievable atzlacha, Rav Mordechai Machlis Shlita. You know, the stories in here are mamash lo yuman. I think the highest level for me was the guy who knocks on their bedroom door at 3 o'clock in the morning. And that was the one place in their home that was basically off limits to all kinds of people. You know, the level of describing in here that you knew how many people were sleeping in the van based on the number of pairs of shoes on the dashboard, that's one level. But this level, the guy knocks on the door at 3 o'clock in the morning, wakes them up. Why? He forgot the recipe of the whole wheat pizza dough. Could she remind him? Could she write it down for him? So she doesn't write it down for him. She goes to the kitchen to make a batch of whole wheat pizza dough at 3 o'clock in the morning when the guy's banging on the bedroom door. So that's mamish, like, it's a different level. I'm not sure how many other people, the Ribbono Shel Olam, thinks that that's even within the realm of ro'oi to even contemplate that. But that's the level of Gemilas Chasadim. That is just, it's mamish unbelievable. It's mamish unbelievable. So the Gemara says in Sota, we can't not talk about chesed just for a minute. The Gemara says in Sota, on Daf Yodalad Haman Aleph, that the whole book of the Torah, Tchiloso Gemilas Chasadim, and Sofo Gemilas Chasadim. After it talks about how chesed is, V'halachta Bedrachav, Hashem clothes people, Hashem takes care of Shiduchim, Hashem, all these things. This Gemara doesn't speak about Shiduchim, it talks about Bikur Cholim, etc. So the Gemara says, has one ha'ara from Rav Simloi, it's Tchilos HaGemilas Chasadim, because Vayas Hashem Elokim La'odom La'ishto Kosnos Or Vayal Bishem, he made them clothing for Adam and Chava. And Sofa Gemilas Chasadim, what happens at the end of the Torah, which is the Gemilas Chasadim that Hashem does? That's right. Vayikbar Oso Bagai. That's Rav Simloi. So why is the Gemara telling us, Dafka, that it's Tchiloso Gemilas Chasadim and Sofo Gemilas Chasadim? Why is that significant? What's the pshat?
Our purpose in the world.
Okay, how does the Gemara illustrate that? What's the Gemara trying to tell us by saying Tchiloso v'Sofo? And what's that?
Everything in between.
That's right. Isn't that the Yisud? It's bookends. It's trying to tell you it starts with it and it ends with it, which means that's it. That's the whole thing. It's interesting. It's not surprising to me that when we come to Matan Torah, we read the story of Rus. And what is the Medrash Rabbah say in Rus? This book has lo tuma v'lo tara, lo isa v'lo mutar, which, by the way, it's an exaggeration. There's a lot of halachas that you learn from the book of Rus. Perhaps you learn more halachas from the book of Rus than you do from any other of the Chumash Megillos. But it says, what is the whole purpose of the book of Rus? Litein schar legomle chasadim. That's the whole book of Rus. So why do you read that on Shavuos? So to me, the most obvious reason is because Tchilos v'sofo gemilas chasadim. But the Baruch Hashem expects that our whole life. You're going to take the Torah. If you want to know one story to take with you from Matan Torah, take the story of doing a chesed for somebody. That's why it's Trilaso, the Gemara says, and Sofo. The whole thing is Gemilas Chasadim. Could you imagine a greater Gemilas Chasadim that we can find in this book? It's unbelievable. It's incredible. You have to also be, you almost have to be careful not to drop the book when you read it because of the nature of the Gemilas Chasadim here, which is amazing. We could have a whole discussion about that, but I want to focus on some other things that are less obvious. So let's start with the beginning of the packet, which is the introduction to the introduction. Right? Most books, they just start with a foreword or a psicha or a hakdama. We've been doing hakdamas. So this is a hakdama to the hakdama. I never saw this about this in any book. Section called A Word About Words. The machlasis have their own lexicon. As I learned years ago, when writing an article about them, the S word that refers to Jews who are not usually considered religious can never appear in a machlis-related book. Of course, a school or a moshav can be considered secular, but never a Jew, because all Jews are holy. When I asked Rabbi Machlis how, in this book, I should refer to those Jews who do not keep Shabbos, what I should call them, he looked at me blankly and said, "Call them Jews." In a particular chapter, I was finding it hard not to use the S word, which we're not on this madriga, so we can say it, secular. I pressed Rabbi Machlis for a meaningful substitute. He came up with this great line. Attorneys would find this. This is like a very, legally, this is good. The many people who come here who are not so openly connected to certain kinds of positive values. That was the best that he could come up with, talking about Chiloni Jews, secular Jews, mamish amazing. The caution, the sensitivity, a word about words, the power of speech, and how we speak about other Jews. Other Jews. A crazy story she has in the book about a guy, she says here, about a guy who wouldn't let the dog into the house, who wanted to bring his gigantic dog. There's also, by the way, a story about a guy who wanted to bring a donkey into the house. That doesn't happen. I never had such a thing. And the machlis said they couldn't bring the donkey into the dining room, which, you know, is already overcrowded with 100 people. This is not shy of what's going on over there. Unbelievable. So the guy starts screaming at Rabbi Machlis that everybody's supposed to be welcome here. So the author of this book, Sari Yocheven Riegel, she says he was crazy. So Rabbi Machlis corrected me, she writes. He was challenged. And then my favorite story, which we're going to get to later, is alluded to in this introduction, the next page, talking about the story of Mordechai the drunk, the drunkard. Because you have to understand what he was. So Rabbi Machlis objected to this, to the moniker, the drunkard. He insisted in calling him Mordechai the occasional drunkard. Why? He says, "I've seen him sober many times during the years. Unbelievable. What does it mean to be careful about our speech? Right? So the pasuk describes in Parshas Noach that Noach was told, bring a whole bunch of animals into the teva. And he says, "Really? What's going on over here? How many animals do you need?" I don't know exactly. You can imagine this conversation, what this looked like. Obviously, he's not a zoologist, so they have to give him some hadracha, and they have to tell him, look, there are two kinds of animals. There are behemos tohoros, and the Gemara says, based on the pasuk says in Perek Zion, there's a behema that's enena tohora. Which yesterday in Parsha Shmini, we called a behema, what was it called yesterday? Behema Tumea. Behema Tumea means it's non-kosher animal. Halachically, it's not allowed to be eaten. So Gemara says in Pesachim Adav Gimel, you know what you learn from this? You learn that you have to be sensitive with how you speak. And you should speak in a nice way. Yesterday, when you have to make a legal comment when you have to be clear about what is kosher and what is treif. So you have to say, this behemah is tmeah. So after Matan Torah, the word tmeah is going to appear. But in the time of Noah, did they have to call the behemah tmeah? It wasn't tmeah at that time. It's only behemah al shem ha'asid that it's going to become tmeah b'shas Matan Torah. So this is what Reb Tzvi Yehuda Cook and many other mefarshim, they explain, this is the chiluk. At that time, it wasn't necessary to call that animal a behemah tmeah. So that's why the Gemara says in the beginning of Psachim, there were 8 extra letters written into the Torah to teach us that we should speak with sensitivity at a higher level of refinement. Because you could have been more expedient and written the word Tmeah and got away with less letters. No letters are extra. But the Pasuk says that Noach was told, bring these animals that are Einena Tahora. It's not pure. Why do you have to call it Tmeah? You could speak in a nicer way. You don't have to call a person secular. You could say they're not yet religious. Rabbi Yudin should live and be well. He was always very, you know, always very, very sensitive. Next week, Baruch Hashem, the rabbi in Chevy, I'm going to go Sunday night. They're having a dinner, 50th anniversary of the shul, before he retires to Fairlawn. As many of you know, before we came to Chicago, we lived in Fairlawn, and I had the privilege to be in their mechitza. The rabbi would never talk about anyone as being not religious or secular. I'd never heard those words from his mouth. It was not yet observant. That's exactly what the Gemara is saying. How do you look at this person? The story with the drunkard. Sometimes he was drunk, but not always. This past week was the yard site of Rav Sender Gross, Zefer Tzadik Levracha, Nechama's grandfather. He was a very prominent mechanech, a huge inspirational figure in the world of chinuch, in Torah Mesorah, chinuch atzmai, founding many schools, 50s, 60s, 40s, it was big. So he settled in Florida. So his son, Rabbi Shragi Gross, as I spoke to him last week, they made a special siyum for the yard site. So he said, my father had a great diuk on what it says in yesterday's parsha about the chazir. Why are you not allowed to eat the chazir? So the pasuk says, I'll tell you why you're not allowed to eat a chazir. What is a chazir? It's a pig that split hooves but doesn't chew its cud. It says, on the one hand, shosa shesa, but mala eina. Gera in a mala. It doesn't chew its cud. So that's why you're not allowed to eat the pig. So Ben Gross, according to the Bracha, had a simple question. The Torah is telling you why you're not allowed to eat a pig. What should it have said? It should have just said, what's that?
Don't eat it.
Why?
It doesn't have the cud.
Exactly. It doesn't chew its cud. That's why you're not allowed to eat it. Why do you have to say you can't eat it? Because it has split hooves, but it doesn't chew its cud. If you explain to me why you're not allowed to eat it, just say you're not allowed to eat it because it doesn't chew its cud. So apparently Rabbi Gross, he said, you look at this chazer, you have to find something nice to say about it. Asher einena tahora. You're right, it doesn't chew its cud, but at least it has split hooves. At least you can find something nice to say about him. Don't say it's a drunkard. The man is a drunk. He's an occasional drunk. Because you can find something nice, can't you? The Torah wants to know you can find something nice to say about everyone. So in Rabbi Gross's case, he was looking at children in a school, in a community. Not all the children are behemah tahora, currently. So you can find something valuable about every child. Depends how you look at them. Depends how you speak about them. You never say that. Rav Zalman Melamed, he's a very prominent Rosh Hashiva in Israel today. He was a close Talmud of Rav Tzvi Yehuda. Apparently, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook had this similar midah that he would always speak Belosho Nikia, even in circumstances that you wouldn't expect it. He says, you know, if you had a boy in the yeshiva or somebody who he knew who had bad midahs, he wouldn't say that he had bad midahs. He would say that this young man needs tikkun amidos. This issue needs fixing. Or, even in a more refined way, he wouldn't say on a sick person that he's very sick or she's very sick. He would say, oh, this person needs a refuah shleima. Right? He had a sister who was very ill, and he knew that she was very, very, very ill. He didn't ask, did she die? He asked, does she still have a connection with the living? This is the kind of refinement that the great people help us aspire to. He even said, you know, when you say in Israel, when you go to, in saying modern Hebrew, when you say you go downstairs, anybody who's ever been to Merkaz HaRav knows that it's a building with a lot of stairs, a lot of different floors. So apparently, instead of saying, Ani yored b'madrigot, I'm going down the stairs, he would say, Ani holech b'madrigot, I'm going on the stairs. Because a person never goes down. What does it mean, Ani yored b'madrigot? I'm not going down the steps. No. I'm going on the steps. It happens to be the stairs are going down. So what is that? You know, you could argue, oh, that's just, it's just semantics. It's just silliness. But I think the idea that this Gemara, in the beginning of Pesachim, is trying to tell us is that speech says a lot about a person. And the truth is, speech affects a person. There was research that was done in the last couple of years that if you ask people to say certain words, it actually has an effect on them. If you ask, the research has showed that if you ask people to say the words kindness and loving kindness and care and concern over a course of a few sentences, they were more inclined to do acts of kindness to other person. If you ask them to say certain words like senior citizen, elderly, something like that, had something to do with them speaking more slowly, slowing down. Because what a person says, it's not just an expression of us, but it's also must be on us. It affects us. So if we want to live at that higher level, close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, one way, says Hani Machlis, is a word about words. That's Aleph. That's the preamble to the introduction. Amazing. Okay. So now let's get to the actual introduction by starting with the title. It's interesting to me that she chose for the title of this book, Emuna with Love and Chicken Soup. Because I would have expected, and if you would have written a book about Hani Machlis, you probably would have written a book called Chesed to Infinity and Beyond, or something like that. And you could sell, like, bobbleheads, you know, licensed merchandise to Infinity and Beyond, the world of Chesed, something like that, Chesed universe. But they chose, she chose the word Emuna, which I think is very apt and very important. Because at the end of the day, what is all of life for all of us? What each of us, what do we boil everything down to? So we boil it down to Emuna. That's what the Gemara says in the end of Maseches Makos. The end of Makos, the Gemara says, you know, there are 613 commandments, and they truncated them to 11 and to 3, and then finally to 1. The Pasuk in Chavakuk, Tzadik be'emuna so yichya. That's the entire Torah. Living with the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our lives. That is really, you see it in so many aspects in this book, that's what permeated her existence, was an awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in her life and in our world on an ongoing basis. Uninterrupted, unmitigated, always living with the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's reflected in different ways. So one way that is reflected, there's a whole section in the book about tefillah. Because tefillah is an expression of the awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our lives. So the Gemara says in Brachos, the Gemara in Daf Chafalav has a suffix. What if you're not sure if you daven? So the Gemara has two opinions, if you should go back and daven again or not. So we paskin, you don't daven again because it's tefillah's drabbana, suffix drabbana lakula. But the Gemara quotes Rabbi Yochanan, Halavai ulavai sheyispalal adam kolayom kulo. Halavai, that a person should spend their whole day davening, and therefore, if you forgot, you should go back again. So even though we don't paskin like that opinion, halacha lemaisa, but the principle, what does it mean, halavai, that a person should be mispalal kolayom kulo, should be davening all day? Well, tefillah is an expression of the awareness, the imminence, our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So perhaps what Rabbi Yochanan is saying is that we should live a life that we're always talking to God. We're always in conversation. We're always connected. Halavai, she yispalal adam kol yom kulo.
And that, you see from this book, that was true for Henny Machlis 24/7. It's even further. There is a piece, there is a piece from Rav Kook in his commentary, the Agadot and Brachos, in the Ein Hayah, in the beginning of the first perek, where he says there are two parts of tefillah. And this also, you see it clearly in the book, that there's one part of tefillah, which is the bakasha, asking for certain things. And then there's the tefillah of shevach, of praising Hashem, of orienting ourselves to realize Hashem's goodness in the world, the role of God in the world, the concept of a spiritual being that guides everything. Those are two different aspects. So Rav Kook explains them in this piece in Memches, where he says that we have to understand, obviously we're not changing God's mind, but we raise ourselves up when we ask for something, because Hashem created the world such that if you ask for something, you'll have the capacity to receive it. If you don't ask for it, He won't give it to you. Even if He wants to give it to you, that's part of the structure. Ve'es shavosam yishma v'yoshiyem. We have to ask for it to get it. Not chas v'shalom that we think that we're changing God's mind. But he says, you notice that goal of Hashem encouraging us to ask for things gets us to the second aspect of tefillah, which is recognizing the role of Hashem. Right? So there's two aspects. There's asking for things so we get them, so to speak. And then there is developing a kesher, bringing God into the world, having that hakar of Hashem. Two different things, right? But obviously, the more we do the first one, that also helps with the second one. The more we ask Hashem for things, the realize we're relying on God, we're bringing God into the world, right? So it's that there are two different tracks, what he calls Rina and Tefillah. Those two tracks, the second one is really the higher level, to recognize and express HaKadosh Baruch Hu's role in the world. Well, that's what the whole life, the whole story of Henny Machlis was all about. That's what it means to live with Emunah, which is nurtured by Tefillah. The more we daven in this way of bringing godliness into the world, the more we express Emunah. And also, you'll notice at a certain point in her life, she was involved in Hisbodidus. What is Hisbodidus? It's, yeah?
You actually go into a quiet place and you talk to Hashem out loud and you ask for bakashot.
Right. So you go and you talk to Hashem in a quiet place.
Right.
Sometimes it's for... Exactly. Now, it could be a person could do Hisbodidus anywhere. You could do Hisbodidus when you're driving in the car. No one is in the car with you. Just talk to the Rabbona Shalom. You don't have to have Hisbodidus to ask for a request. You could have Hisbodidus just to talk to Hashem and tell Him what's on your mind. Like the Piasetzin writes in his diary, just to unburden yourself. To feel like somebody had to, you know, sometimes you just want somebody to listen to you, especially you don't want them to talk back, you know? So that's a good etzah. Hisbodidus is good. You know, because otherwise, when you talk to certain people, they always want to talk back. And you're like, you know, I'm not interested in listening right now. I just want to talk. So the piece that's the writes in the diary, he says, you know, the basic aspect of feel is just get it off your chest. So tell the Rebbe Shalom what you have to tell him. If he talks back, call me. I'm interested. But his bodidus, anybody ever see the film a few years ago, Ushpizin? Right, Ushpizin, that was big. Breslov, they're big on his bodidus. So he was going out to the forest. That's what we call his bodidus. That's because there is such a strong emuna that conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu becomes real. It's an actual conversation. Now, there are obviously, and I think this is important for us, at our level, I shouldn't speak for anybody else, there are different levels, different dargas of emuna. Let's go back to Noach. So the pasuk says that Noach was 600 years old, and what happened? He looked outside and started raining. And the Torah says, Vayavo Noach ubano ve'ishto nishevano ito elateva mipnei me hamabul. Noach and his family entered the teva mipnei me hamabul. What does the word mipnei mean? Right. Because of. What do you mean they came in the ark because of the rain? They came in the ark because
it was raining. Because they had to get out of the rain.
They had the sense to get it out of the rain.
That's right. So Rashi there says, he quotes from Chazal, and obviously we're not ones to judge, because God never told us to make an ark. We were never in that circumstance. But Rashi says exactly that. That he did not go in until the water pushed him in there. So Rashi says he was miktane amona. Mamin ve'eno mamin. So what do we learn from that? That he was a small believer. A little believer. He believed that mamin ve'eno mamin. He had, you know... The Pasuk does say he was Tzadik Tomim, right? At least at the beginning. But it tells us that, you know what? When we look in the mirror, sometimes maybe we're not the great Mamin Gadol. Maybe we're just a Mamin Katan right now. Because there are different dargas. So Noach at that stage in his life was Miktane Amona. He was a small Mamin. He had a little bit of Emuna. But that teaches us that we can dig deeper. So we can have a lot of Emunah. He had a little bit, but contrast that with whom? Who is Noah usually contrasted with? That's right, Avram Avinu. Did you ever have a bigger mamin than Avram Avinu? That's why the Chazal, they describe them as Noah Hayat Sarech Sa'ad. The word Sa'ad means he needed a little help, a little push. L'som kol, a little Sa'ad. He needs someone to push him along. Mamin, he was a katan in Emunah. But Avraham Avinu lo yad tzarech l'sad. He got it. He took it all on his shoulders. He was a Baal Emuna neto, alone, totally. So we see there are different levels. That's inspiring. It should not be discouraging. It should be inspiring for us. Maybe today we're at the level of Noach. Maybe we're Miktani Amuna. Halavai, by the way, we should be Miktani Amuna. That would be great. And then we're going to keep growing. So maybe we read this book and we're like, Heni Machlis, she was Migdolei Emuna. Migdolei Emuna. And I'm not yet at the level of Migdolei Emuna, but that's okay. Because Emuna is not binary. And that's the Chiddush. Miktani Emuna means it's not that either you believe or you don't believe. It's a continuum. It's a well. How much deeper can we build our Emuna? How much deeper can we go? Right? So we shouldn't feel that either we don't believe or we do believe. There's no such thing. It's not a yes or no. It's not on or off. There are different madrigos, different levels. And we go through our life and we're trying to build these. That's why we read this book. Because we're trying to build within ourselves. And everybody needs to find for themselves what helps them build their emuna. But it's not either I believe or I don't believe. Think about ourselves. It's to what extent do we believe? How much emuna do we have? So now is where you transition from emuna to the next level, and this is a key here in what we call bitachon. So bitachon means relying on God. And what does that mean practically? How do you translate emuna to bitachon? So there are different approaches. There is a beautiful article on this in this book called Be'or Panecha Yahalechon. I think this is the English tradition, this is the Hebrew translation of Rav Lichtenstein's By His Light. I think it was originally in English. I happen to have it in Hebrew. But I think this, so Rav Lichtenstein has an article called Hein Yikteleni Lo Ayachel HaBitachon Bashem. So he quotes different approaches to Bitachon. So one he quotes here is from the Rabbeinu Bachya ben Asher and the Kara Kemach, where he says, Bitachon means Sheyim Sar Adam Nafshu El Hashem Yizbarach. A person should always be obsessively, unceasingly thinking about God. That's what bitachon means. That's what it means. And therefore, bitachon, according to this approach, has nothing to do with how much effort a person puts in and how we lead our life. It has to do with a consciousness and a focus. That's one definition of bitachon. That's probably the least well-known definition of bitachon. But he quotes two other definitions. One is predicated on the Chazon Ish and Emunah Bitachon. And there's a lot to say about this. There are several articles. If you look, there's a tradition article by Rabbi Daniel Stein about these next two approaches, as well as there was a response in the tradition discussion. And also there's an article by Rabbi Bechhofer, who was here in Chicago for a period of time. Did he live in Skokie?
No.
But people know him. He wrote an article several years ago, maybe 10 years ago. I don't know. He wrote an article about this issue about bitachon and different approaches to bitachon. So one, the second approach to bitachon is the Chazon Ish's approach, which is that God has a master plan for the world. He's going to work everything out, and you should just take solace in knowing that the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to square everything at the end of the day, even if it means that maybe my particular circumstance will not work out the way that I want it to or the way that I feel like I would like it right now. And that's bitachon. But then there's the third approach to bitachon. And this is what some are familiar with. This is what Rabbi Stein calls the Navardic approach to bitachon, which is that if you have enough bitachon, if you have enough reliance on God, it will happen for you. Now, there are different traditions, and so different people go through life with different masoros. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chayim. Different people have different yesodos in their lives, how they feel about bitachon. And today we don't have time for a whole discussion of bitachon extensively, but you have the Mar Makomos, you have this article, you have those other articles, there's a lot more to say. But it would seem that there are people who literally live at that highest level of bitachon, and life happens for them in that way. There's a story about the Heiliger Rebbe, Reb Zusha. You know, Reb Zusha of Anapol, his brother, Rebbe Elimelech of Lezhensk, the two of them were from the great early sages, the great early Hasidic masters. So Reb Zusha was extremely humble, extremely, extremely self-effacing. He never said the word I. Because who am I? I? There's only one I. There's only one I. That's the Ribbono Shel Olam. So Reb Zusha, every morning, would daven Shachris on his little shtiebel, and after Shachris, he would look up to the Ribbono Shel Olam. He would say, Ribbono Shel Olam, Ta, Zusha's hungry for breakfast. Zusha wants to do the service of Hashem, but Zusha's a little bit hungry. Could Zusha please have some breakfast? That's what he would say every morning. Now, because Reb Zusha was a Rebbe, there was a Shamus who worked, you know, took care of things. So he was in the kitchen, and every morning he was responsible to bring out a little bit of breakfast to Reb Zusha after davening. So one day, he hears Reb Zusha with this conversation that Reb Zusha says to the Ribbono Shel Olam after davening, Zusha's hungry, could you please send some breakfast? And the Shamus says, what a chutzpah! What a chutzpah naira! I've been bringing him breakfast every day. He never says, you know, Yankel, could you please bring me some breakfast? So he says, you know what? Tomorrow, I'm not bringing him breakfast. Then let's see what happens. V'kachava. The next morning, Reb Zusha finishes davening. He takes off his tefillin. He sits down. He says his tefillin. He's finished tefillin. He looks up to Ribbono Shel Olam. He says, Ribbono Shel Olam, Zusha's a little bit hungry. Is there maybe something to eat? And the Shamus is looking out of the corner of his eye from the kitchen. Let's see what happens now, huh? And Reb Zusha is waiting. And 2 minutes later, he says, Ribbono Shel Olam, the truth is really, I'm pretty hungry. If there's something. And 10 seconds later, there's a knock on the door. So the Shamus gets up and he opens the door. And there's a man standing with a huge tray of fruit and cheese and fresh hot rolls. And the Shamus is just shaking his head. It's like, what are you doing here? He says, well, I have to see Reb Zusha. I feel really bad. I was running into town yesterday to meet the famous Rebbe Reb Zusha, and I was crossing over the bridge, and I was in such a rush that there was an old man who was walking, and I accidentally bumped him, pushed him on the bridge as I was walking. I just bumped into him. And after I got over the bridge and I went to see, could tell me somebody where I could find Reb Zusha, someone said, you idiot, that was the old man you pushed on the bridge. So I felt so bad, I figured this morning I should come and bring something to him. So I brought breakfast. So the Shamus says, I got it. He looks up the Ribbono Shel Olam. There are people, I believe this. I believe this, Be'emunah Shleimah. There are people who mamish are living at that level.
They're living at that level. It describes here Maisim like this. It doesn't mean they didn't do any hishtadlos. It describes how they went to the supermarket on Friday afternoon. Friday afternoon, this is on page, if you're looking for Mar Makomos, this is page 190 to 191, that on Friday at 12:30, they hadn't yet gone shopping because they had maxed out their credit cards and they had no money in the bank. She had already pawned off all of her jewelry. She had nothing left. 12:30. So she would be mechazik Mordechai because he was nervous. So she said, did we ever cancel Shabbos? Did it ever not work out? So Mordechai says, but even if we got money now, the supermarkets are going to close. It's 12:30. Don't worry. It's going to work out. And what happens? Kachava. He calls a student, because they were both teachers, Malamdim. He calls a student in Chutzlar and says, you know, we're not ready for Shabbos yet. It's 12:30 Shabbos Friday afternoon. You know, already all the supermarkets are closed. He says, he got the donor's credit card number. He runs to the only supermarket in Yerushalayim that accepts a credit card number without a card. Because you know that's already a chachma. As they were getting ready to close, he would run through the aisles, tossing Shabbos supplies into the carts. On Friday night, he recalls, Henny would have this smile on her face, like, why do you have to be so nervous? And no one would know. No one would believe that a few hours earlier, there was nothing in the house. This other story, I love the story. This is Mar Makomos. This is page 40, 41. This girl, Aliza Friedman. So she comes Friday to make the challenge. So at that time, a lot of the barley was you know, if you, well, I have to say, in the lashon of the machlis, in the spirit of the shir, it was not yet checked to make sure there were no bugs. Because it was not uncommon to find bugs in the barley. So they got in the habit, because you're making challenge for 150 people every Shabbos, to have to check that much barley for bugs is crazy. So they got in the habit that people who knew them, who were coming from America, would bring bags of barley, which had a much lower infestation rate, and they would bring barley from America and drop it off at the Machlis's apartment. Kacha, that's what it was. So this woman describes that she was once there on Erev Shabbos, and she went to prepare the challah, and there was no barley, Friday afternoon. So she says to Henny, what should we do? So what does Henny say to her? Don't worry, Hashem will help. So she starts preparing all the other things for the challah. But how are you going to make challah without barley? What is it, Pesach? Can't, it's not Shaykh. So Henny remained calm. And every time I asked what the backup plan would be, she replied that Hashem would help. Suddenly, Emma Samaisen, suddenly, a girl who frequently volunteered at the Machlis's showed up at the door. She had just come back from America, and she was schlepping a duffel bag filled with barley. But this is the chop. You ready? My dear friends, Javier and Medidim, this is the most unbelievable thing. Henny didn't even look surprised. That's the most amazing part of it. Pashut. Of course he wasn't going to let them down. That's the amazing thing. She wasn't even surprised. And maybe that's the biggest mussar for us, even if we're not living on that level. The Rabbeinu Bachya Ibn Pakuda, the more famous, I guess the relatively more famous Rabbeinu Bachya, if you had to rank them, the author of the Chovas HaLevavos, so Rav Lichtenstein quotes him here in this context about Bitachon, where he says that the main thing about Bitachon is that a person should not be anxious. And that's a high level, and it's a big chizuk for me, and it's something that I can think about and work on. He says, this is the introduction to Shaar Bitachon in the Chovas HaLevavos. Menuchas nefesh habuteach. Just not to be so anxious. Not to be so worried. The Ribbono Shel Olam will square it all at the end of the day. Whether you follow the Chazon Ish Bitachon or you follow the Nevardic Bitachon, whichever one it is. But there is a God. The Ribbono Shel Olam will make it right. Do we always understand how? Do we understand why? We don't. But the lowering of the stress, knowing that the Ribbono Shel Olam is there, sheyehlibo samuch al mi shebatach olav, sheyasa tova nachon lo, the Ribbono Shel Olam will take care of it. That's the high level of emunah and bitachon that we can strive for. Even if we're not going to live on that level. And of course, yes, we do need hishtadlus, and they also did hishtadlus. But the level of emunah that she's living on, that's what Mordechai describes. It's mamish. He was nervous. The husband who is having 150 people and the donkey standing outside every Friday night, he says, I'm not on her level. That's what he says about his wife. He says, I'm not on her level. For people on her level, it's a different thing. It's exactly what Rav Chaim Kanievsky said last week about Lahav L'Menachayim Menachayim, his wife, Allah HaShalom. He says, I'm not on her level. For her level, that's for people at her level. Amazing. Yeah, go on.
You notice, but for every person at that level, there needs to be like 10 or 100 other people who are nervous.
Yes.
To make it happen.
So, exactly. I would say, I don't know if it needs that the 10 or 100 people need to be nervous, but they need to be doing stuff to make it happen. Exactly. But Henny would say, that's how the Ribbono Shel Olam runs the world. So why be nervous? Because he's got it. If you're at that level, it's amazing. But the point is, I think for us, even if you follow the Chazon Ish approach, that it's not always going to work out perfect, and it's not going to be what I would want for myself. But knowing that the Ribbono Shel Olam takes care of everything at the end of the day, that should give us, it should take it down a notch. Yeah.
It's a bit of a fetish with Abraham when he would say, when Sarah was his sister as opposed to his wife. So he's doing his thing, and potentially, and then you can look at it as the bitachon that Hashem will do his, as opposed to feeling like there's a lack of bitachon, and therefore, that's a different.
Exactly. So what you're pointing out here, and this is the area that every person finds their own balance, is the what we call the balance between bitachon and hishtadlus. Hishtadlus, you have to do something. It doesn't say that Henny assumed that somebody else was going to make Shabbos for them. That Hashem was going to deliver Shabbos for 100 people. Right? God helps those who help themselves. So the eternal question, and it's different for different people, different madrigas, is what does it mean to help themselves? Right? Obviously, and for any, this is a big thing in the book, the Gemara says in the end of Maseches Nida, ha b'lo ha lo sagi. There needs to be davening, there needs to be a conversation with God. God helps those who help themselves. God's got to be a part of the picture. But then the helping themselves. So for Avraham Avinu in one story, it's saying achosihi, right? For them, Mordechai didn't say, I'm going to sit back, I'm not going to call my students to try to fundraise for this. And by the way, you know, I'm not in the business of fundraising, but I will say that after I read this book, I went directly online to make a contribution to help support. They have every Shabbos. Still, after she died, the end of the book, the Shabbos after she died, after the Shiva, they still had people. Arayom said they still have. Hundreds and hundreds of people. It's mamish lo yu uman ki yisupar. So it's the, I'm going to hold it just because we're running out of time. It's this balance of hishtadlus and bitachon. But you know what I would say? I would say two things. One is, let's make sure we're still having that conversation. Let's make sure as we go through our life and as we're growing, this reminds us, where am I on that conversation? Because more important than where I am is the fact that I'm having that conversation. That's Aleph. And Beis, recognizing that emunah translating to bitachon means don't worry so much. Don't be so tied up in knots. Because at the end of the day, the Ribbono Shel Olam is there. Is there for each one of us. Okay. A couple more points because we're running out of time. Oh, there's so much more. I'm killing myself over here. This is terrible. All right. Let's go back to the introduction. Oh, I am so sorry. We're rushing.
Don't worry. It's going to work out.
Oh, that's it. Thank you. Oh,
Baruch Hashem.
Amazing. Oh, great. So much chizuk right there. You need your own medicine. So in page 20, the author describes how, did I know Henny Machlis? No. Not until I started researching her life. This is an important yisod. This is the yisod that Shlomo Karlbach, all of us shalom, Shlomo Kalbach used to emphasize this. I know there's some controversy about that, but we're going to leave that aside. It's an important takeaway. Many of us are familiar with the holy miser, Yossel Kamtzin Kodesh, which we don't have a half hour to tell right now. But the idea that you never know, is important. You never know what's going on in somebody's life. You never know. The person next to you may be a secret Henny Machlis or Mordechai Machlis. You don't know until you get to know them. That's one half of this. But the other half that I thought, which was interesting, which comes out through the book, is that you don't know what somebody's going through or what somebody's all about until you get to know them. But then when you get to know them, you also learn something. That she wasn't born perfect, and it wasn't easy, and it wasn't always a success. Sometimes she did scream at her kids, or sometimes she did make a decision that she regretted later. And that was part of her growth, constantly working on herself. We shouldn't think that, well, this was obviously coming to her, it was obviously easy, it was something that was natural to her. No. It was something that she worked on. And the more that you read here about how certain things were a struggle for her, the more you get to know her, the more you understand that that was what she worked on and what she grew to become, the more we realize we can do the same thing. Maybe not to the same extent of godless, but we shouldn't think that it's not shy to us because we need to work on ourselves. I remember years ago, Rabbi Tendler from Munzi told a story about Rav Moshe Feinstein, his father-in-law, Lahavdol. Rav Moshe, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha, was known as such a saintly man, so kind, so patient. So Rabbi Tendler said, some episode happened with Rav Moshe, and he was very patient. And he said afterwards, Rabbi Tendler said, how did you do that? So Rav Moshe said, you know, when I was younger, I was very impatient. I had a very, very quick temper. But I worked on myself for a long time. This was the man who was kemat onav mikol adam. It wasn't natural to him. So the you never know means that we need to work on ourselves. And we don't have time to be marich. There's an amazing article, you can get it online, a tradition article from Rabbi Dr. Schneer Lyman, the Heilige cousin Schneer. So Schneer has an article on this wild piece from the Tiferes Yisrael. The Tiferes Yisrael, and the end of Maseches Kedushin that I have here. Tiferes Yisrael tells a story that some of you are familiar with, that there was a king who lived in some faraway land at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, who sent Bikiyim of Chochmas HaFizianami, the ability to read people's faces. And he sent a shaliach, this expert in reading people's faces, to meet Moshe Rabbeinu. He goes and he asks him to write, to make a drawing. An artist should send a drawing back and then describe it, that Sayar would draw a picture of Moshe Rabbeinu and then they would interpret it. And he comes back and Moshe Rabbeinu, he says, all of these... He says, I can't believe it. He couldn't even breathe. They all say, it looks horrible. This must be a man who is of such low moral fiber. How could that be about Moshe Rabbeinu? So there's a whole long story here in the Tiferes Yisrael. This Tiferes Yisrael, so this is what Dr. Lyman's article is about, caused a huge uproar. How could you say Moshe Rabbeinu was exactly that? So Dr. Lyman, first of all, points out that it's very likely that this story is borrowed from pagan or Christian origins that somehow crept into Jewish legends. It appears only first time in the early 19th century. But what's interesting, he points out, is that there were different ways that people reacted to this. In the Chassidish circles, this story became very popular. And it didn't matter where the origins of the story were. Why do you think in the Olam of Chassidus, this type of story about Moshe Rabbeinu would take hold? Why would the Talmidei Baal Shem Tov, the Degel Machne Ephraim, and others, he quotes, why would they be interested in this story? Why would they say that about Moshe Rabbeinu?
Because when he was young, he was impatient and he was not such a good guy.
And then
he grew.
Exactly. It teaches us to work on ourselves. And that even if Beteva, a person isn't that much of a refined gadol yet, going back to a word about speech, a word about words, but we can get to that point. And that's why even though there were many who opposed this, there were many who celebrated this idea. So this idea of Heni Machlis working on ourselves is something that we can take away. The last point, because we are really kimat out of time. And that is the idea of loving all Jews, of Avas Yisrael, but I think there's something different here, a little different than what we focused on last week with Rebbetzin and Kanievsky. That we spoke about loving all Jews, all different kinds of Jews, wherever Jews came from. But here, what is reflected in this book is a love for all people, even if Nebuch, they are broken. If they are criminals, or drug addicts, or drunks, finding a way to love all of those people. And I think that doesn't just come from a midah of ahava, it also comes from a midah of anava, of humility. Maral emphasizes in the Nesivas Olam, in the Nesiv HaAnava, how anava is like water. That water, what happens? When you pour it in a high place, it flows down to a lower point. So the Gemara says about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the Gemara Megillah, B'makam sha'atamotze gadlusa, wherever you find the greatness of God, where, what else do you find? Sham atamotze anvasanuso. You find this humility. Because God takes care not just of the elite, he takes care of everything. All of the creatures from the top all the way to the bottom. It's like water. It goes all the way to the bottom. Takes care of everything. A person who is going to open their home and their heart to someone who's a little bit broken, it doesn't just take love, it takes humility to say, we're going to welcome those people and we're not going to be embarrassed. Sometimes there's the netiya of a person who's arrogant to stay at the top of the mountain, not to let the water flow down. Why? Because I'm a chash of a guy, I only want to associate with the upper echelons of society. I don't want to be associated with the people at the bottom. The vagabonds, lo aleinu? Shouldn't even use those words, according to where we started. But that level of emuna, of anava, of kedusha, that self-purification, that brings a person to be domet l'Kadosh Baruch Hu. The kedulaso is anvasanuso, and it relates to everyone. So we'll close with my favorite story of this whole book, Mamish, of all the stories. So it describes at the end that they asked two people after she died to deliver a few words at a shloshim. So who did they ask? They asked Rabbi Dov Machlis, that's Rabbi Machlis' Mordechai Machlis' brother, and they asked Mordechai the occasional drunkard to speak at the shloshim. Why? Because, unfortunately, lo aleinu, this Mordechai, the occasional drunkard, he was homeless, and he went from place to chveis. But one of the places where he used to sleep was in the cemetery, because it's quiet. So it describes that a few days after Henny was buried, this drunkard went to sleep in the cemetery next to her grave. He brought a few beers, and that's where he was going to stay. And it started to rain. So what happens? He goes to a nearby, one of these, like, garbage dumps type of things, where they had a construction site, where they had a huge piece of abandoned plastic, hard plastic sheet. And he goes and he drags it to the cemetery and he puts it over her grave that it shouldn't rain on her at night. Because that's what she meant to people. That's what she meant to these people. Unbelievable. Mamish unbelievable. So one of the things that they say in the book that we can take away from these stories is what would Henny do in this and this situation? You know, maybe we're not at that madrega to do exactly what she would do, but to think for ourselves in our lives at our madrega, let's look up. Masai yagiu masai lamasai avosai. What would she do in this situation? How can I follow in those footsteps? How can I hold on to those coattails and lead a more inspired life, a life of more chesed, of more tefillah, of more emunah, so that we too can be a little bit more like Henny Machlis? Shikoach, have a great week.